muted.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Zenit Bank PLC H1 2014 financial results conference call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm very pleased to present Peter Mankbo, Group Managing Director, CEO. Please begin your meeting, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me welcome you to our conference call, where we'll be reviewing the performance of Zenit Bank for the half year up to 30 June 2014. My name is Peter Mankbo. I'm the MD CEO of the bank. With me here this afternoon, I have Ebenezer Onyango, Executive Director, Enterprise Risk Management. I have Stanley Amuchie, our Chief Financial Officer, who will take us through the performance of the bank. I have our General Manager and Head of Investor Relations, Mike Anyima. I want us to turn to page four, where we will look at the Nigerian economy and key developments in the banking sector, especially as it relates to our business and our performance for Zenit Bank. The real GDP grew at the rate of 6.21% year-on-year in quarter one 2014, up by 1.76% from 4.45% recorded in the corresponding quarter of previous financial year. It's important to note that the non-oil sector accounted for this major increase, and this is actually a very good news for the bank in terms of our turnover. Headline inflation increased to 8.21% year-on-year in June 2014 from 8% year-on-year recorded in May 2014. Oil production and price had been very stable within the period under consideration, and it even rose up to $107.89 per barrel. We expect that this trend will be maintained for the next half of the year. Foreign reserves. Nigerian foreign reserve has been quite stable, on the average about 37.7 within the half year under review. This is attributable mainly to the measures introduced by the central bank, both in quarter one and in quarter two, and the resolve of the CBN to apply foreign reserves to defend the naira from devaluation. Exchange rates also has been quite stable during this period under review. This, I'll say, is attributable mainly to some of the policies introduced by the central bank. Today, the central bank requires all banks to fund their account 48 hours before any bid. This in itself has helped to ensure that the exchange rate remains stable. Cash reserve ratio. The cash reserve ratio for public sector funds was increased from 12% to 15% effective April 2014. It's also worthy to note that for public sector, cash reserve was increased from 50% to 75%. These measures taken together have helped in stabilizing the exchange rate. Eurobond issuance. Zenit Bank embarked on a Eurobond issuance towards the end of the first quarter of 2014. The objective is basically to broaden our funding base for dollars in terms of tenor and in terms of pricing. We went for $500 million, and it's important to note that our offer was oversubscribed by over 200%. If you turn to page five, we have our investment proposition. We will continue to remain a dominant player in the Nigerian banking industry. We expect that market share will continue to grow, as witnessed in the first half of the year. Increased share of middle-tier market and the retail market. We are extending our focus not just to the corporate sector, but also to the middle-tier and the retail side of the business. This we've adopted to ensure that we bring down our cost of funds by increasing our share of the retail and the middle market. We will also deploy various electronic tools to ensure that we offer a very good range of service and cash management offerings to this segment of the market. Risk management. Our risk management will continue to be very robust. We will continue to focus on the quality of our assets, which is exemplified when you look at our NPL ratio, which dropped from 2.95 to 2.8% at the end of the half year 2014, with a coverage ratio of over 9%. Dividend payout. We will continue to be consistent in terms of our dividend payout. Our dividend payout for 2014, we will expect will follow the same trend over the years. Credit rating and awards. We have a double B minus rating, which is constrained by the sovereign rating of double B minus. But it's important to know that we will continue to focus on all that is required to ensure that our rating continues to be one of the best in the industry. During the year, it's worthy to note that of all the awards that was conferred on Zenith Bank, that KPMG awarded Zenith Bank as the best bank, not just in the corporate segment of the market, which we've won consistently for 3 years, but in 2014 or 2013, we are judged the best customer-focused bank in the corporate sector, in the middle market and commercial market, and in the SME segment. This is an attestation to the fact that we're a dominant player across all segments of the banking industry. I want to hand you over to Stanley Amuchi, our Chief Financial Officer, to take us through the financials and performance of the bank. Stanley Amuchi, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Stanley Amuchi, and I'll be taking you through the results of the group and also results by segment and geography. I'll be starting from slide 7 on the financial highlight. The bank remains on course for an impressive performance in 2014. Gross earnings went up 7.84% year-on-year to 184.43 billion. We consider this a demonstration of the bank's continued consolidation of its revenue generating capacity and expansion of its market share. Net interest margin was though down 7.78% year-on-year, but on quarter-on-quarter it was up 1.5%, largely as a result of the pressure on margins due to the CRR increase, as the cash reserve ratio or requirement increase more. Loans and advances went up 10.73 year to date to 1.41 billion. Our key ratios remain strong and above regulatory requirement, with loan to deposit ratio at 55.8% and NPL ratio of 2.8%. We believe that we're operating at very much above the regulatory requirements, and that is strong in the industry. If we go to slide 8, this slide shows the profit and loss statement, highlighting year-on-year improvements in gross earnings, clearly buoyed by 8.73% increase in interest income and 30% growth in non-interest income. Overall, there was improved top and bottom line earnings driven by deposit and loan growth and our operating efficiency. On slide 9, we also see this slide will show the trend in net interest margin and the cost-to-income ratio. Seeing NIM inch up 1.5% quarter-on-quarter from 8.02% in quarter 1 of 2014 to 8.14% in the second quarter. This happened notwithstanding the margin pressures caused by increasing cash reserve ratio, because the bank was very focused on effective asset and liability management. Cost-to-income ratio remained flat year-on-year and even quarter-on-quarter, despite the fact that the full impact of the staff cost and promotion increase that happened in the second half of last year took effect more in the first half of 2014. Go to slide 10. This slide will show the analysis of interest income and non-interest income. Interest income grew by 9% year-on-year, with income on government and other bonds, loans and advances growing by 26% and 36% respectively, which then contributed to the growth. However, the growth in interest income was dampened a bit by a decrease of 35% year-on-year of interest income on treasury bills and investment securities. Also, you will see that non-interest income grew by 30% on the back of a 24% increase in credit-related fees, 73% increase in net gains on financial instruments, majorly FX sales and some little bit of trading, and then 26% increase in other fees and commission. We go to slide 11. Now, this slide will show the analysis of interest expenses and operating expenses. Interest expenses increased by 32% year-on-year on the back of increases of 61% in interest on savings account, 23% increase on interest on time deposits, and then interest expense on borrowed funds. That's majorly from Euro bonds and multilateral borrowing. Then OPEX was up 7% year-on-year, though below nominal GDP growth of about 14.5% as a result of the full effect of, as I mentioned before, the staff cost and promotion. Slide 12 and 13 show the asset and liability sides of the balance sheet, depicting sustained balance sheet strengthening and growth and strong liquidity and capital base. Slide 14 shows the trend and mix of loans and advances and deposits. Loans and advances grew 29% year-on-year, while deposits grew 15% year-on-year. The bank's deposit mix remains positively skewed towards low-cost current account and savings account balances at above 80% of total deposits. Slide 15 shows the analysis of liquid assets and funding mix. We will notice there that the mandatory reserve deposits with CBN increased by 130% year-on-year. This was as a result of the increase in of 75% of public sector deposits and 15% for private sector deposits as for CRR. Also, borrowings increased by 283%, and this was majorly to fund medium to long-term USD funding. Funding requirements of our customers. Now if you go with me to slide 17, this slide shows the profit and loss of the bank by geography. Again, you will notice that the Nigerian business continues to be the main driver of our profitability, providing over 90% of the gross revenue. However, you will also see that our operations in the rest of Africa and Europe, there are some good improvement year-on-year in their contribution to gross earnings. Also, if you look at slide 18, this shows the profit and loss by sector, and we can see that the contribution of corporate and commercial business segment of industry has improved year-on-year from about 34% to 46%, showing improvement in the bank's core business segment. Slide 19. This slide shows the deposits and loans by sector. And here we can see that corporate and commercial banking on the loan side is a major part, constituting about 79%, while on the deposit side we have retail at about 31% and corporate and commercial at 43%. At this point, I will hand you over to the ED to take you through the risk management sector part of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stanley. My name is Ebenezer Onyago. I'm taking us through the bank's enterprise risk management framework. We continue to maintain our template of risk management, which remains very conservative and robust. We are steadily reviewing this to ensure that we adapt to changes in the market, and in terms of implementation, it cuts across all levels of the bank. On slide 22, we have the distribution of the loans by sector. We have continued to diversify our portfolio while focusing on the key growth sectors of the economy. So our dominance of key sectors like communication, oil and gas downstream, as well as manufacturing, is clearly revealed in this slide. But overall, we have no concentration risk as the portfolio remains extremely well diversified. On slide 23, it shows the NPL by segment. The NPL, we've continued to work on it. We've seen year-on-year improvement from 3.1% to 2.8%. This is arising from the renewed focus on recovery and ensuring that in terms of the risk asset generation we are doing, that we don't make wrong credit calls. We expect this trend to continue as we drive to push it even to the lower band of 2 by the end of this financial year. Slide 24 depicts the strong capitalization and liquidity of the bank. We remain an extremely well capitalized bank with a very strong capital mix, and our liquidity remains very robust even in the face of growth in our risk assets. We expect that this trend will continue as our capital is extremely will remain predominantly tier 1 capital. So may I now hand you over to the MD CEO on the strategic outlook for the rest of the year.
Thank you very much, Ebenezer. And if you turn to page 26, we have our strategies for driving our vision. It's very important that we continue to compete aggressively for market share. But focus will be on the quality of the assets and excellent relationship while adopting cost reduction strategies. If you look at our cost to income ratio, which we highlighted earlier, it's been flat, but our target is to see how we can drive down costs, and that will be a major focus for the second half of the year. We want to deliver superior service experience to all our clients and customers. We will continue to invest in people. We will continue to invest in cutting-edge technologies to ensure that we delight our customers, especially as we now have increased focus in the retail and the middle markets. We will use all electronic channels, including mobile banking, internet banking, and all other tools for our trade services to ensure that our customers get superior service. We'll also strive to develop products that are suited to different segments of the market. Our key growth target sectors, as much as we want to diversify our business and ensure that there's no concentration risk, we see potentials for growth in the following sectors: infrastructure, manufacturing, upstream oil and gas, even the downstream, real estate and construction, the telecoms, transportation, general commerce, and more importantly, agri. Our competitive advantage will remain our strong capital base and liquidity, both in naira and dollars, our very strong brand equity, strong international rating, extensive branch network, both in Nigeria and other African countries, our robust ICT and e-banking channels, well-motivated staff force, and our excellent customer service. There are other initiatives that we are looking at, and the first I want to mention is how we intend to grow our retail business. The biometric system that the Central Bank of Nigeria introduced has already commenced, and we are very, very aggressive about this because that this we expect will help in growing our retail business. The cash light project of the Central Bank has modified recently. It is also an opportunity that we feel will help in generating both fee-based income and complementing the services that we already render to our customers. It will afford us the opportunity of rolling out more ATMs, POS terminals, and other non-conventional terminals to be able to serve our customers. There will be increased focus on agri, which we believe will be an area that will drive our growth in the second half of the year. So I want to thank you for listening, and we are ready to take your questions and comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question or make any comment, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, you may press 02. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. And once again, it's 01 on your telephone keypad if you wish to ask a question. Our first question comes from the line of Adesuye Solanke from Renaissance. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Sorry, I joined the call a little bit late, so some of my questions might have been answered. My first question is on loan growth. What were the key drivers of your loan growth year to date? And what do you have as your year-end target in terms of credit growth by end of this year? The next question is, if you can talk me through what your strategy is on deposit, given it's been flat year to date. My next question is on margins. Where do you see this going by end of this year? It appeared there was some pressure on funding costs in the second quarter, on asset yield in the second quarter, given the low interest rate environment. So generally, where do you see your margins being by end of this year? And if you could also give us some sort of update on your PBT guidance for end of this year, what is your target? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Soji. I'll tell you straight away that in terms of loan growth, loan growth, the basic driver, it actually cuts across different sectors. Talking about the 10.67% that we achieved, we have the downstream oil and gas, we have telecoms, and we have other sectors. So it's not actually one particular sector that accounted for that. And in terms of the guidance, we expect the same 20% that we advised at the beginning of the year, that will remain our guidance. And what we've done for half year is roughly half of what we expect to do for the whole year, 10.67. So we still have room for about 9.4% in terms of loan growth. Yes, deposits was basically flat, and I will tell you that it was deliberate. If you look at the fact that we issued a euro bond at the beginning of the second quarter, $500 million, we refinanced some naira facilities, which even injected more naira liquidity. So we even had to return some deposits, because the key is not just the size, but we want to be very, very efficient. Cost of funds is very, very important to us, and we'll actually look at how to be very efficient. To that extent, we have to balance both the costs and size. So it's very, very important. What drives our deposit strategy really is that cost, because liquidity-wise, we are very, very comfortable. But we also have a guidance for our deposit base, which we announced at the beginning of the year. We expect a deposit growth of 10% when compared to 2013. You talk about margin being under pressure. Certainly, margin will be under pressure for everybody in the industry. If you look at the fact that cash reserve requirement for private sector was increased to 15%, and for public sector was further increased to 75%, certainly there will be pressure on margins. You cannot pass on all this cost to your customers. But we are looking at ways in which we can moderate this. And if you look at what we close with, you will find out that we've done exceedingly very, very well, that in spite of the contractionary measures by Central Bank, we were still able to maintain a decent margin. You talked about, then you asked about the guidance for PBT. Our guidance for PBT has not changed. We advised 120 billion, and that is what we are still sticking to. Thank you very much.
Hi, Peter. If I can ask one follow-up question. So how are you thinking about your capital ratios and dividend payment going forward in light of Basel II introduction and the rapid pace of your loan growth over the past 18 months? Does anything really change for you? Do you think your loan growth could slow down or dividend payment?
If you look at capital adequacy ratio and our capital generally, all what we've heard from investors is Zenith Bank is overcapitalized. These have always been the comments over the years. And it's like, look, we even have people asking us questions. Are you going to return capital to shareholders? Looking at Basel II and Basel III, it's basically vindicated us as a very visionary bank that we always prepare well ahead when it comes to regulatory issues. We don't wait for regulators to come up with their pronouncement. We try to be very proactive and operate in a very safe manner. With Basel II and Basel III, the simulation has actually started. And if we are to implement Basel II, III today, our capital adequacy ratio will be about 20%, which is still very, very comfortable because the central bank for systemic important banks, it's 15 plus 1%. So we don't have any challenge there. And in terms of our dividend payout, it will continue to be the same. Our loan growth, our guidance is basically, we are very comfortable with that. We've taken Basel II, III into consideration when we advised the 20%. I will stick to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you, sir. Our next question comes from the line of Bunmi Ashali from FPM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. If I could start with the last point on the capital adequacy ratio again. Clearly, Q and Q4, we trace back to the dividend. But I'm just trying to see whether, I mean, given where you are now, are you comfortable with what the number is, i.e. there's no need to maybe tag on a tier 2 at this point at all, because it's the lowest CAR you've had for years. And I know Basel 2-3 has been talked about a bit, but it's a bit of a moving target, so we don't know exactly what the comparable number to that current 15% would be. So if you could just talk to whether you're very comfortable with where you are right now and you would not be needing to do any tier 2, that would be really helpful. Then on the non-interest income line, even though it's flat Q on Q, the FX gain line has been quite strong. So 7.4 in Q1, 9.6 billion in Q2. Can you talk us to, again, how comfortable you are? Is this something you think you can sort of keep going at this sort of level, or whether we'll see more volatility going into the second half of the year? And then finally, tax guidance, should we still keep the 14-15% that you guided to earlier in the year in our models? Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Bubi, for your question. On the issue of capital adequacy, I think the MDCO addressed that earlier. Given where we are now, if we are to begin to implement Basel II, it will only dilute our capital adequacy ratio to 20%, which is clearly above the statutory requirement of a systemically important institution like us of 16%. So we don't see any pressure for us to begin to think of alternative arrangement to show up capital. And this has always been in line with our conservative approach to working out key fundamentals of our business. So we are not, we don't see any anticipated pressure in that respect. For the FS business, the FS sales, Zenith is largely a volume-driven institution, and we expect that we'll continue to maintain that. And as we drive the volume, we expect that we should be able to get the incremental growth in the overall margin that we earn. NIMS, yes, for obvious reasons, we all know that NIMS is pressured. But what we're also looking at is a more sophisticated way of managing our NIMS to ensure that where we are now will be the least level that we expect to be. Everybody has adjusted to the regulatory implication of the upward review of the CRR, and that has been the main reason why NIMS came under pressure. So given our approach to business, all we are looking at is the overall portfolio and making sure that we continue to consistently look at other new areas to ensure that we cushion whatever shortfall we have in areas that are contained by regulation. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you very much. Your next question comes from the line of Landrin Aluro from Primary. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Landrin Aluro from Primary Africa. I just want some, your cost of funds, what is the number actually, and I see your names, but I have any guidance on what your cost of funds were the past, for the half year, and what you expect it to be towards the end of the year?
Okay, our cost of funds, we close at 3.96 for the half year, and we expect it to be around this level, you know, going into the next half of the year.
Okay, and also in regards to your NIMS, I mean, you know, I know the CRR has been touted as a major reason, but how much of an impact the fact that yields on government securities has, you know, has come down, and how much of an impact that also, you know, been on your NIMS?
So you will notice that, yes, the volume, because you will see that the income on government securities came down, especially on the Treasury bill, because the volume also went down. But you also see that on the other side, our loan, income coming from loans and interest income on loans went up. What the bank has done is to see to strike that balance, you know, to make sure we maintain some good balance. Where we are not having so much income, we'll try to make up from what we can get both on the interest level and then on other fees like non-interest income, just to make sure that we have our target, we're able to meet our target for this financial year.
Okay. And there's one more
thank
thing
you very
on the OPEX line. Hello?
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. On the OPEX line, I mean, you know, 7% for the half year, I mean, it's quite decent. I mean, do you see any room for growth in this line? I mean, you know, possibly bringing your cost-to-income ratio, you know, maybe below 50%.
So our target, for, at least for this year, is to make sure that we'll get it down, you know, but it's not something that will go very drastic to 50% in 1 year, but we're working towards bringing it below where we are currently.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Dubisi from OBK. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation. Please, I'd like to know your view on the power asset loans. Even though it's just 3% of your total loan portfolio, I'd like to know your outlook for that sector, because there have been a lot of concerns about the players, they are not be able to meet their cash flow projections, and this might be another source for sort of NPLs in the future. I'd like to know your view on that. Also, be interested in what portion of your balance sheet is foreign currency based. This aside the euro bond you just raised.
Okay, thank you very much, NDBC. On the power sector, you've asked a very general question now about that particular sector. I think it's important to note that, for starters, this is an emerging sector. And the divestment by the federal government, these assets were handed over 1st of November. So the first thing I will say is, it's still early in the day for us to start talking about a challenge sector. The sector has its own challenges, no doubt. Gas is one, and collection from consumers is actually another. Capacity is an issue for generating companies. But be that as it may, it's important that we know that this sector is still very, very early in the day. And the learning curve naturally will come to play. It's a sector that over time will come good. In terms of regulation, in terms of the players in the sector, they are learning very, very fast. Remember that what the banks finance so far is basically equity for the acquisition. And there are so many things we look at. When you are talking of financing equity, you are not expecting that all the repayment of the acquisition loan will be from income generated from just those assets. So it's important that we actually distinguish that. We've not even started financing CAPEX for now. So I believe that it's very important that the sector requires everybody's support, patience, and understanding. And we strongly believe that the sector will come up very good. So I think that's really our perception in terms of the power sector.
Okay, good. You asked about the power sector, the non-performing loan. Yeah, part of the power sector, I just think that. Now, what you're seeing there is about 3 points. That's a drop. If you look at the year-end position on that, and we mentioned that they are very old loans, that is not this particular power sector regime that happened, and the customer is paying down. That's why if you look at our presentation for the year-end, contributed about 5.6%, and now that has dropped because there are some repayment on that. Now on the balance sheet, you try to find out the portion of our balance sheet that FX we have is about 19% of our balance sheet that is FX as it were now.
Thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you, sir. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. And our next question comes from the line of Deepan Patel from Satya Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi there, good afternoon. On the asset side, looking at the T-bills from 2013 to the first half of 2014, there's been a big decrease, even though these are high yielding, versus the interbank assets, which have almost doubled in that period, and which are a lot lower yielding. What is the strategy in terms of liquidity and the rationale behind shifting away from high yielding assets to lower yielding?
Yes, Stanley.
Okay. The figure you have in due from banks was a time issue. You know, we had those balances at the end of the half year, and that was just like an overnight kind of balance which needed to be reinvested the next day. So normally we want to invest more in treasury bills which are high yielding. So that's a point position. But our approach is always to look out for more yielding assets to invest in. But just a balance if you go for
that. So, sorry, just so I'm clear, the 501 of interbank, are you saying that that's not reflective of the actual amount?
Sorry, I didn't hear you well.
Just so I'm clear, the 501 of interbank assets, saying that amount is too high at the moment of what has been reported?
So what I'm saying is this, that those balances were the balances we had on that day. They were more like an overnight balance,
right,
that our foreign subsidiary had with other on that day. Okay, so I mean the next day that position would have changed because we would normally move those assets to more high yielding assets. You know, like treasury bills.
Got it. Okay, so they're overnight and they'll get moved later. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you, sir. Our next question comes from the line of Ryan Lloyd from Hardin Lovner. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I was wondering if you could just confirm on the capital adequacy ratio. You mentioned 20% level for Basel II. I think you may have said Basel III as well. Could you confirm that? And then also, could you speak maybe about the increase in lending and the mix between Naira loans and FX loans in new lending so far this year?
Okay, on the capital adequacy ratio, what we're saying is if for considering Basel 2-3, that the impact based on our scenario analysis will take about 3% of our capital, and if we're at about 23 now, so we expect that if you take that into consideration, we should be getting to about 20%.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then on the new loan mix?
The loan mix, we continue to focus on the key drivers of the economy, i.e. we have the telecom sector. We also have the downstream oil and gas, as well as manufacturing. And it's also important to know that when it comes to risk asset creation, we look at the top end of the market. We indeed choose and pick our transactions here. Then in terms of percentage of the risk assets that we have in dollars, I think like Sandy earlier pointed out, what we have is about less than 19% of the balance sheet, which we have as the exposure in dollars. And it's also very clear to state that in terms of the exposures we are creating in USD, they are strictly against transactions and customers who have dollar flows. So we've done that in order to hedge against the exchange rate issue. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand how the mix is changing. So on new loan growth so far this year, how much of that has been U.S. dollar versus Naira?
Yes, sir, let me just put it this way. You know, we raised $500 million in terms of the euro bond. Essentially, this will change the configuration of our loan book. Because $500 million, we are talking of close to about 82 billion Naira. So that in itself, if you add that to other ones we did, say approximately about 100 billion, you will find out that it's actually changed the configuration of our loan book, and that's why it's increased to about 19%. It was much less than that, as Ebenezer mentioned earlier before. So next question, please.
Thank you, sir. Our next question comes from the line of Erin Enriquez from TIA. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Can you just talk about your provisioning policy? I've just been seeing that your provisioning has been falling over the past year, and then just comparing that against the rise in gross NPLs.
Okay, for the provisioning, what we do is to ensure that in terms of risk assets creation, that we focus at the top end of the market. Margins are not that attractive when you look at this market, but what you are sure to do is that it guarantees you the quality of the asset you carry. So because of this focus, we are able to really maintain a very low provisioning, as virtually the portfolio there remains very efficient and performing. So it has always been our style, and we don't see any need to change. So as a result, we can guarantee that our NPL will continue to go downwards.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you, sir. Our next question comes from the line of Oladipo Durusinmi Eti from FSBH Merchant Bank. Please go ahead.
Hello, hi. I wanted to know, in terms of the AMCOM charges, are we expecting them for there to be an increase on those anytime in the near future? And also, concerning your T-bills, I noticed you've actually reduced your so-called T-bills. Do you plan to replace them with any other form of investment, or you want to maintain your stand, the current T-bills? And also, with the CRR going forward, what do you expect, or what other strategies do you expect to counter its effects on your balance sheet or P&L?
Okay, well, on the investment in Treasury bill, the Treasury bill was always going to be an interplay between earning assets. You know, you will notice there's a drop in our volume of Treasury bill, but you also see a growth in our loan balance on one side. And you said it rightly, you know, the pressure on the CRR there is always there. The funds that were naturally available for investment in Treasury bill, you will see that growth also in balances with central bank. So what it means in effect is that the funds you have is a little bit restricted what you can invest. But in the light of all this, what we'll keep doing is to look at the best ways to deploy our liquidity to make sure that we're making good returns for all the investments we do.
Okay, and on the issue of AMCON charge, whether there's going to be an increase, AMCON charge is already very aggressive, and we are one of the largest contributors to that because it's based on the total assets of the bank. Whether they will increase it, nobody can tell, but what I can tell you is that it's very aggressive as it is now. And if they are going to reduce it, that probably will be the direction that we should be looking at, not increase. Next question, please.
Thank you, sir. Our next question comes from the line of Dubisi from OBK. Please go ahead, sir.
Oh, hello. My follow-up question still centers around the power sector loans. Do you see a possibility that there will be a special arrangement for this sector, given, like you said, it's very important to the growth of the economy and it's a young sector? Because if, for instance, these loans are not able to meet their cash flows, and even for those who are equity, for those loans are equity loans, if you test for impairment and you think they are lower than the original values, I think there should be a risk of higher industry NPLs, and CBN might intervene and say, okay, let's make a special case for this sector. Do you agree with me on that, or do you think we're coming up more from this sector, at least for this year, given that some of these loans will be at least 180 days old by this year, and going by prudential guideline, you might need to make some provision.
So I think the assumption you are making is that this loan is not being serviced, and I'll tell you it's actually wrong. You cannot combine, or there are different obligors. No matter how good a sector is, whether it's oil and gas, upstream or downstream, no matter how attractive a sector is, the players there, you cannot lump them into one bucket. In terms of even the equity contribution, the capacity, the cash flow of the different obligors, they are completely different, and the investors in this sector. So I think you'll be making a mistake if you just carry all of them to say, well, because they invested in power assets, then their loan will naturally be challenged because there are challenges in the power sector. It is not exactly like that. Their capacities differ completely. And let's not start looking at, oh, CBN will come and bail out. There's nothing to bail out at this stage. These are just sitting problems in a particular sector. So let's not look at it that way. And I can tell you, for Zenith, for example, we finance three different assets, two distribution, one generation. And I will tell you that the loans have been serviced. The cash flows, they're even strong, even stronger than what they used to be when we had the benefit of handling these accounts before they were sold. And that was the good thing. We knew the cash flow. We handled two of those accounts for about 10 years with the companies that handled them before they were sold. So let's not make the assumption that because we're talking of some challenges in the power sector, then anybody who invested there, the loan is already bad because you're already counting 180 days. So it doesn't work that way, please. Let's look at each of the obligors on their own merits, and their financial condition completely differs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from the line of Budmir Shali from FPM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a quick follow-up. I think one of my questions wasn't answered. It was one on tax guidance for the year. You had 14 to 15% previously. I just want to confirm that's still the same. And then if you could please shed some light on the FX transition loss that hit the other comprehensive income line, please. Thanks.
Okay, good. On the tax guidance, yes, I can really confirm to you that we're still sticking to about that 15% that gave us guidance. Then nothing has really changed to warrant our changing that position now.
Okay, and the FX transition loss on the OCI line?
FX transaction loss?
Translation. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's like mark to market. That's what it is. Maybe that a timing thing, you know, a particular position where we were taking that position. That's it.
Okay, and is it Africa or Europe? Sorry, can you hear me?
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by while we reconnect the speaker line. Thank you. Speaker line is online.
Next question, please.
Thank you, sir. We have no more questions registered at this time. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have no more questions registered. I hand the conference back to you.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for taking our time to participate in our conference call for Zenith Bank. We want to thank you. And on a closing note, I want to assure all our partners, all our stakeholders, all our investors that we'll continue to work very hard to ensure that all what we've committed, we actualize them. We'll continue to reward our shareholders with superior performance, good dividend, and growth. So I want to thank you once again, and I wish you well. Thank you very much. And bye for now.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you very much for your participation. Participants may now disconnect their lines.